The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, friends. This is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you articles of interest from Money.com. Our first article is a timely one. When can you start filing taxes? It might still be winter, but just like those April showers, tax day will be here before you know it. While it's tempting to put off filing your taxes until the last minute, it's not smart to procrastinate. If you run out of time and file your taxes late, you can expect to get hit with penalties. And if you owe taxes, interest payments on top of the money you already owe. Getting an extension on your taxes just gives you more time to file your return. You can still have to pay what you owe by the April deadline. You can avoid all that hassle and expense by filing your taxes early. In fact, you could file your taxes today if you wanted. The IRS is already accepting 2024 tax returns. Well, here's what you need to know. When can you start filing federal tax returns? Not the type to wait until the last minute. First of all, good for you. Procrastinating over your taxes is a recipe for a headache. Plus, if you owed a refund, the sooner you file, the more quickly you can get your money, assuming there are no complications processing your return. The IRS doesn't have a set calendar date for when tax filing season begins each year, but it usually is right around the end of January or the beginning of February, kind of like the Super Bowl, but with fewer Taylor Swift sightings. Tax day is always either on or very close to April the 15th, a date that gets moved only to accommodate weekends and holidays. This year is no exception. In 2025, tax day is April 15th for most filers. However, the date the IRS chooses to begin each year's filing season depends on a number of factors, including changes in tax law and the agency's overall readiness. This year, the IRS announced it would begin accepting 2024 tax returns on January the 27th, meaning we're already into this year's filing season. If you file with a tax prep service or an accountant, before then, they just hold your return until the filing season opens and submit it then. Building on a pilot it launched last year, the IRS offers Direct File, a program that lets people with simple returns file for free. The agency says more than 140,000 taxpayers used the tool in 2024. This year, Direct File is back, in spite of some initial confusion. On February the 3rd, Elon Musk posted on X that the government division responsible for building the tool has been, quote, deleted. As of February the 6th, however, the Direct File landing page was live and operational. The IRS had no immediate comment. Building on last year's pilot, Direct File is available for taxpayers who live or work in one of the following 25 states: Alaska, Arizona, California, Connecticut, Florida, Idaho, Illinois, Kansas, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, and there's North Carolina, Oregon, Pennsylvania, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Washington, Wisconsin, and Wyoming. Although Direct File is for federal income taxes only, the platform will direct you to state resources for filing your income taxes there, and most participating states have their systems integrated with it. Direct File is different from Free File, a long-standing partnership the IRS has with major tax prep software firms available to individuals and families with adjusted gross incomes of $84,000 or less. When you use Direct File, File Free, or another platform to file your taxes, you need to gather the relevant documents beforehand. This includes your W-2 if you earn wages or a salary, and a 1099 if you earn income from other sources, such as freelance work or interest on a bank account balance. When can you start filing state taxes? Although state income taxes aren't handled by the IRS, most state tax collecting agencies follow the same calendar as their federal counterpart. While most states' tax calendars mirror the IRS's, there are outliers. New Mexico and Delaware, for instance, have deadlines of April 30th, 2025. Note that New Mexico has an April 15th deadline if you choose to file a paper return instead of filing online. Nine states don't levy an income tax. People who live or work in the remaining 41 states and the District of Columbia can check online with their state's Department of Revenue for key dates and deadlines. Well, why file your taxes early? Most people aren't waiting eagerly to file their taxes as soon as possible, but filing early, especially if you have a more complex return, is a smart move. For starters, if you're expecting a refund, filing sooner typically means getting that money sooner. And if you owe taxes due, at least you'll have a couple of months to fit that payment into your budget. Filing your taxes early also means you're less likely to be the victim of an identity theft scam where a criminal impersonates you in order to steal your refund. While the IRS and states have been cracking down on the practice, it's still a risk. Waiting until the last minute means you'll probably have a lot of company. With most people filing online these days, the era of long lines at the post office to have taxes postmarked by the deadline is over. But if you have to contact the IRS or need any kind of assistance filing your taxes, you could find yourself in a very long virtual queue if you put it off. Filing early means you're less likely to encounter lengthy delays on customer service lines or overloaded websites. If you need to pay for tax prep assistance, waiting to file could actually cost you more. It's become a common tactic for the big tax prep companies to adjust, or otherwise known as increase, the prices for their services the closer we get to April 15th. Our next article, even as rates fall, I-bonds still offer savers a way to beat inflation. As inflation continues to cool, the yield on Series I savings bonds, a.k.a. I-bonds, is falling in tandem. On Friday, the U.S. Treasury Department set the new rate to 3.11%. And it should be noted this particular article was published on November the 7th of last year regarding the rate, which is in effect for I-bonds purchased this month through the end of April 2025. The new rate is a far cry from the record-setting 9.62% reached in 2022 at the height of the pandemic-induced cost-of-living crisis. Looking for a hedge against inflation, investors and everyday savers then snapped up billions of dollars worth of I-bonds. But even as consumer prices moderate, the low-risk government bond remains an attractive choice for long-term savers and investors. That's because today's I-bonds have a perk that the bonds purchased back in 2022 did not have a 30-year fixed rate of 1.2%. What to know about the new I-bonds rate? The newly announced headline rate of 3.11% is known as the composite rate. It is an annualized version of two separate rates that are announced every 6 months. One is the inflation rate. This inflation rate changes every 6 months based on the preceding six-month fluctuations in the Consumer Price Index, which is the most commonly used measure of inflation. This six-month rate is currently 0.95%, which is the rate of inflation from April to September. The other is the aforementioned fixed rate. As its name suggests, this rate is set in stone at the time of purchase and lasts for up to 30 years or until you sell your bonds. Right now, the Treasury Department has set the fixed rate at 1.2%. While the inflation rate is predictable, the fixed rate is a bit of a wild card. The Treasury Department does not publicly reveal exactly how it comes up with it. Since I-bonds were created in 1998, the fixed rate has changed as high as 3.6% and as low as 0%. And since the Great Recession, the fixed rate has mostly stayed under 1%, meaning that the inflation rate of I-bonds did most of the heavy lifting in recent years. In fact, when I-bonds went mainstream in 2022 with that blockbuster 9.62% annualized rate, the fixed rate was 0%. The entire composite rate was due to sky-high inflation. Now, as inflation falls, folks who bought I-bonds at the time still have that 0% fixed rate locked in. So their yield is actually less than the newly announced 3.11%. It's 1.9%. Because of this caveat, some investors are cashing in their 2022 I-bonds with a 0% fixed rate to repurchase ones with a 1.2% fixed rate. When considering whether to cash in I-bonds, it's important to keep in mind that they can't be redeemed within 1 year of purchase, and I-bonds redeemed within 5 years have a three-month interest penalty, similar to what a certificate of deposit has. Alternatives to I-bonds. When comparing annual percentage yields, or APYs, there are plenty of alternatives that are currently beating the I-bonds 3.11%. For instance, some CDs and high-yield savings accounts still boast rates above 5%, though with more benchmark interest rate cuts from the Federal Reserve coming, the days of 5% APY are numbered. The national average rates on these types of deposit accounts are far lower. According to the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the average APY is 0.45% for savings accounts and 1.81% for 12-month CDs. Savers and investors sizing up I-bonds' new rate should factor in the caveats and perks, namely the interest penalty, inflation protection, and the $10,000 annual purchase limit. The Treasury Department previously allowed you to use up to $5,000 of your tax refund money to purchase paper I-bonds, though it is now discontinuing paper versions entirely. In the short term, CDs and high-yield savings account offer more attractive APYs. For long-term savers, even though I-bond rates have fallen considerably since 2022, the current fixed rate ensures that bonds purchased today outperform inflation by at least 2.4% annually for up to 30 years. And here is an interesting and timely article, Stockpiling Before Trump's Tariffs. Experts warn it could backfire. As tariffs on China take effect, and possible tariffs on Mexico and Canada loom, you may be wondering if it would be smart to stock up on imported products before costs go up. If so, You're not alone. A recent survey by BidOnEquipment.com found that 12% of people were already stockpiling goods due to tariff-related concerns. That follows a separate survey released in January by researchers at the University of Texas, University of California at Berkeley, and the University of Chicago, in which more than 40% of respondents said they were, quote, likely to stockpile goods before tariffs hit. The future effects on consumers of any proposed tariffs are unknown. While President Donald Trump talks in, quote, maybe, maybe not terms about whether tariffs will bring pain, economists say the answer is likely yes. Ultimately, the risk of inflation could sway the administration to not go through on enacting major tariffs on Canada and Mexico, but it's unclear. Meanwhile, a 10% tariff on imports from China went into effect on Tuesday, which was immediately met with counter tariffs. Trump's tariff action with China could affect an estimated $400 billion of goods that Americans buy annually. According to the Nonpartisan Tax Foundation, tariffs on all three countries would amount to an $800 tax on American consumers in 2025 and would rank as the largest tax increase in more than 30 years. And due to stockpiling, the inflationary consequences of the tariffs will manifest themselves even before the tariffs are put in place, further complicating the Federal Reserve's job of bringing inflation back down to its target, the aforementioned university researchers wrote in a working paper. So should you stockpile ahead of tariffs? Experts are discouraging consumers against, quote, doom spending over tariffs as concern rises that excessive stockpiling could lead to higher prices or even supply crunches. Remember in 2020 when toilet paper stockpiling briefly spiraled into a mini crisis as everyone made runs on the stores. Amar Muvasavain, professor of supply chain management at the University of New England's College of Business, told CNBC that stockpiling could cause more harm to consumers in the way of shortages, outweighing the possible marginal benefits. Stockpiling is also inherently difficult because many items are perishable, and there are really only so many use cases in which you could particularly stockpile. Unless you have room in your garage, and are you going to store a giant Walmart haul of goods from Mexico and Canada? If you're at that point where you're asking yourself if you should fill up your freezer with avocados, maybe pause and question if you're trying too hard to min-max the situation. That's also money you're literally freezing away that you could have been using for anything else, like earning interest on or supporting your actual spending. In addition, not all Trump's threatened tariffs may come to fruition. Wall Street analysts, including those at Goldman Sachs, have noted that it's still a question of if tariffs will actually go into place on Canada and Mexico. If the situation does devolve to that, the tariffs could be short-lived, meaning less effect on American consumers. Officially, the Trump administration says it has delayed its proposed 25% tariffs by 30 days, following pledges from Canada and Mexico related to stopping fentanyl trafficking. Even if tariffs are enacted, prices won't rise for everything that the U.S. imports from affected countries. There are robust supply sources of some imported goods already stored in the U.S., and other goods can be sourced from countries not under threat of tariffs. Alternatively, you could buy domestic products, for example, substituting Budweiser and Vermont-grown maple syrup for Modelo and Canadian syrup. In certain cases, however, consumers may face increased costs as tariffs take effect. Categories like electronics and apparel are expected to be among the most affected by China tariffs, for example. It's fine and potentially even prudent to move up normal purchases that you know you're going to make in the near future anyways, experts say. We've covered some things to consider buying now, from appliances to cars. And that article appeared evidently in another publication in Money.com. But you don't need to turn your home into a warehouse or buy cases of maple syrup that will inevitably just collect dust on the shelf. Our next article, loud budgeting, a viral trend. But does it work? Remember the quiet luxury trend? Thanks in part to the Vive session, it was big in 2023. Perhaps best showcased by Succession and the Gwyneth Paltrow trial, quiet luxury centered around showing off one's wealth. And now, according to social media users, it's totally passé. On the ins and outs list, quiet luxury has been replaced by, quote, loud budgeting, a new concept in which you make your frugal mindset obvious. It's not, I don't have enough, it's, I don't want to spend, creator Lucas Battle put it in a TikTok video with over 1.4 million views. Or, as he said in another clip, it's, sorry, I can't go out to dinner. I've got $7 a day to live on. The term is spreading quickly across the internet. But could it actually work as a money-saving technique? Julie O'Brien, Senior Vice President and Head of Behavioral Science at U.S. Bank, says that loud budgeting can make people feel less alone and more empowered, especially in a world where social media can amplify one's desire to keep up with the Joneses. They are saying there is no shame and guilt in their financial situation, O'Brien says. They are just saying out loud that healthy management of their money is something they value more than consumption and the curated unrealistic ideals that they seem to portray. As Brian Ford, a Northwestern Mutual wealth management advisor, points out, young people are facing hurdles like the recent return of student loan payments, lingering effects of record inflation and high interest rates. It makes sense then that they would want to spend meaningfully, prioritizing their financial well-being over something like a handbag or coat, he says. The sheer fact that people are thinking critically about their spending is a huge step. So is publicly discussing it. Talking about money is awkward, but loud budging encourages you to embrace it. This, too, has a perk. Like with regular New Year's resolutions, telling others about your commitment to saving money can increase accountability, making it more likely you'll follow through. Many people can identify with having to prioritize essentials like food and housing over disposable expenses, and loud budgeting is giving people a community where making those difficult but responsible choices can be celebrated, Ford says. Although vowing to be obnoxiously cheap in 2025 definitely has merits, it comes with downsides. Ben Markley, a personal finance educator and content creator for YNAB, gives the example of turning down a request from a friend to get drinks at a local bar. Maybe you'll save a few bucks, but you risk alienating your friend and denying yourself some much-needed personal connection. Broadly being like, anything that sounds expensive, I'm just going to say no to it, isn't quite the right approach here, Markley says. Instead of blindly following the loud budgeting trend, he suggests using it as an opportunity to make sure your spending and savings habits are aligned with your goals. Using an app, spreadsheet, or even just a note on your phone, write out what you're hoping to accomplish, how much you think it'll cost, and how you plan to afford it. That way, the next time a friend asks you to drinks, you can make an informed decision. That empowers you to say, I'd like to do that, but I really want to go to Colorado next summer, or I really want to get these student loans paid down, he adds. It also empowers you to say, actually, yeah, I decided this was important to me. I made space for it with my money. And so now I can say yes with confidence. And as we finish up our episode today, we will not be able to get this entire article in, but we will do our best to get most of it in. 4 in 10 Americans think AI could help them manage their money. Investing in artificial intelligence is becoming popular. But what about artificial intelligence investing in you? According to a new poll, results shared exclusively with Money, Americans are becoming increasingly willing to let AI, or artificial intelligence, manage their personal finances as the technology goes mainstream. Personal finance company Intuit Credit Karma conducted an online survey in early July, asking roughly 1,000 U.S. adults for their thoughts on using AI for managing their money. The Intuit Credit Karma data shows that Americans are warming up to mixing AI and money. Of the investors who responded to the survey, 4 in 10 say that they think AI can be a useful tool for managing their finances. For investors who have already used AI, this openness trends even higher. Of the roughly one quarter of respondents who have used AI before, 57% say they are willing to use the technology for financial purposes if it eliminates their money problems. In fact, one third of this experienced bunch says that they would trust AI more than a human to manage their finances. And we will edit this article today because we're now out of time. Thank you for joining us. And until next time, this is Larry Wilson. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is also available as podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call, 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks again for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.